Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello and welcome to part two of this week's Clash of the Titles, the podcast that pits two movies with something in common in a fight to the death to see which one comes out victorious. On Monday's episode, we met the big screen Addams Family, which means with introductions out of the way from 1993, it's time to evaluate the Addams Family values.
And then Mommy kissed Daddy, and the angel told the stork, and the stork flew down from heaven and left a diamond under a leaf in the cabbage patch, and the diamond turned into a baby.
Our parents are having a baby, too. They had sex.
So, which film will be just the right amount of creepy and kooky, and which will be too mysterious and spooky? We'll have a winner at the end of the show, so let's get it on. Welcome to Clash of the Titles.
Release the Kraken!
Hello, Clash Butters. Don't we wish they would just die? I'm Alex Zane.
I'm Vicky Crompton.
I'm Chris Tilly.
And welcome to part two of this week's final... Oh, I was going to say final Clash Wing countdown because someone didn't change their script. Say Ron Burgundy. I dare you.
It's fine. You know. You clearly know.
I know. Welcome. Welcome to just this regular part two of a Clash of the Titles show.
Yeah, the Guy Fawkes. It's November.
Remember? Sure. Sure.
Episode.
Yeah, that'll do. Yeah. Before we get into Addams Family values, it's time for a dip into the regular digital mailbag and a weekly review from one of you. And thank you again to all of those of you who take the time to review the show wherever you do that. It's hugely appreciated. Take it away, Chris Tilly, a.k.a. Chris Thrilly.
You didn't read one out while I was away about Weird Science, did you? I listened. I don't think you did.
Yeah.
I don't remember.
We did, about the guy who was like, are they on drugs?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that one's definitely been read.
Okay, and that is from Alan Tazzy, who gives us 5 stars.
Thank you, Alan Tazzy! Yeah, and if you want to hear that review in full, do check out our Weird Science episode where it's read. No, actually, it's not the Weird Science episode, it's the week after. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Chris was away, so that's why he doesn't know.
I did listen to it, though.
You got another one? Any more?
Do you want another one?
I mean, only if you've got your laptop there, you see them all
there's
set up.
There's a very short one.
The internet's great here.
There's a very short one. I think it's someone rewriting a previous review. Mm. I think that's what happens. I think you can update your reviews.
You can.
But anyway, they have written... where is it? From Kate, comma, it's short for Bob.
Yep.
5 stars. Still love you, but stop getting Alan wrong.
That's you. Like, you're the only person who quotes Alan Partridge on this show. So you must have got some Alan Partridge wrong.
I need more information, Kate, short for Bob.
Kate, short for Bob. Do get in touch because...
Or just update your review again. Yeah.
Anything to haul Chris over the coals about Alan Partridge, because he knows.
I am.
You are. That story always tickles me. That story.
The brandy story.
Him going up to the loft with a bottle of brandy and the Alan Partridge podcast on his own on New Year's Eve, drinking the brandy, listening to the Partridge pod.
And going, you're just so right. But he's just so right.
It's not that far off the truth. And it was my best New Year's Eve ever. But I was with Stuart Arnold. Hi, Stu. Never listens.
Hi, Stu. Oh. By Stu. Right then, let's do this. On Monday, Chris guided us through the lack of plot in the Addams Family and if it ain't broke, etc., as it's a case of business as unusual in Addams Family values. Let me take you on a journey. Sex is a weapon which, when deployed accurately at the right target, can render them unable to fight back. That's what Uncle Fester discovers when he falls into that familiar celebrity trap of sleeping with the nanny. Except this nanny is less nanny and more serial killer, the Black Widow, who traps wealthy men, marries them, then murders them. If only Whip Smart Wednesday was around to foil her dastardly plan. But no, the widow has had her and Pugsley shipped off to Camp Chippewa to undergo a horror of their own. Escaping camp, Wednesday and Pugsley get home just in time to be electrocuted, which seems like a pointless threat, as I'm sure over the last two movies we've already seen all the family undergo similar punishments, including electrocution, and survive. Nevertheless, Pubert to the rescue. Debbie dies, and we're left with one of the most affecting lines of both movies. As Joel says to Wednesday, your family is really interesting. Your parents are so involved with each other. To be discussed. As for your consideration, Addams Family values. So, histories with this bloody movie. Chris?
I can't remember.
No, me
I mean,
neither.
Yeah, I mean, I saw it at the cinema and thought it was quite funny. I never really thought to revisit it. I was quite surprised 10, 15 years ago when I started reading about it being such a big cult movie and that people loved this film quite as much as they did, because I just remember really liking both movies when I saw them.
Okay.
That is my history with Addams Family values.
Okay, Victoria.
It's the same. I haven't revisited either of them really, and so I've got the two of them conflated, and there are so many similarities about, you like you said before, the stage play and Morticia going back to a house to sort of, you know, sort out the imposter storyline thing. What I can't believe now, I would have gone to the cinema to see this with my parents, because that's what we did the first time round, and all the sex talk, I can't believe it. It's just such a weird feeling that I don't remember being embarrassed, so I mustn't have been embarrassed. So why is that? Was I too young to get it? Or were my family like really cool and we'd done all that by then?
Sex talk, do you mean like when Fester and Debbie and Ned's talking about virginity and he's a virgin?
Yeah, I mean, they expressly say, I'm a virgin, so am I. And I must have known what that is. I just can't remember.
I think we were at an age where it was like virgin.
Yeah, I guess. But then why are we laughing at that? Because we're laughing at it because it's like, oh, it's good to not be a virgin. But I would have been 12, 11. Yeah. So no.
I was going to say, I would have seen this. I realise now I would have seen this with my friends rather than my parents.
Yeah.
Because I was 15 by this time.
Okay.
And so, yeah, I wouldn't have had the embarrassment factor
going
on.
Yeah, I just wasn't embarrassed. So I tell you what, it wouldn't have... My family, it's not that we didn't talk about our feelings. So I don't think it would have been that we'd done the sex chat and there was nothing to be embarrassed about. I just wouldn't have had a fucking clue.
I will say that the fact that there are such similarities between these films... It's quite fun because I was watching the first movie and I swore the fish out of water stuff when they're in the motel was from this movie.
Yep.
And so it's always a nice surprise. For a movie that feels so familiar, I'm like, oh, that's in this movie.
Yeah. I was getting worried I'd get them confused doing this.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I've seen this movie probably as many times over the years as the first movie. And yeah, I get them kind of confused, as I just said. But this movie, I don't know. I always remember this for the Camp Chippewa stuff.
Mm-hmm. Sure,
and how good that was. And I remember that the first time I watched it.
No, I could remember the camp stuff and the nanny in the tight outfit with big boobs.
Joan Cusack being a freaking legend. We'll talk about that. Let me tell you a bit about this movie. So it's written by Paul Rudnick, who, as we talked about on Monday, did loads of rewrites on Caroline Thompson and Larry Wilson's script for the first film without getting any credit. So here it's all him. And personally speaking, bar some things to talk about, I think it's better for it script-wise. Angelica Houston says in her memoir, talking about this movie, her memoir is called Watch Me. The family values in the film's title is a tongue-in-cheek reference to the 1992 speech by Dan Quayle, the then presidential candidate, whose name I remember because I always found the name Dan Quayle quite funny. Mm-hmm. But he basically said in this controversial speech, he blamed the 1992 Los Angeles riots on a breakdown of, in inverted commas,
family values.
Yeah, his big thing was, I think he even mentioned it in that speech, was on, at the time on the TV, Murphy Brown, who was this great feminist character in her sitcom of the same name, had a child out of wedlock. Mm. And so he said, he acknowledged that he didn't watch the show, but he thought that this was just a terrible thing to be promoting on television. And then straight after that, George Bush had that famous quote where he said he wants the American family to be more like the Waltons and less like the Simpsons, which the Simpsons got so much value out of over
the
years.
It's one of the best episodes where George Bush moves over the road. It's brilliant. And they go to war with each other.
Yeah. And I think I read somewhere one of the Simpsons writers, when there were some accusations made against George Bush about sexual impropriety, said, I think George Bush should act more like the Waltons and less like the Simpsons.
So a little bit on casting. It'll be very short. All of the main Addams Family members return for the sequel, except for Judith Malina. So Grandmama is replaced in this movie by Carol Kane. The only thing I could find about why she was replaced was the role was becoming more and more demanding physically, and so she was getting on, and she didn't want to do it anymore.
And you want to replace her with a great comedy actor, haven't they? Who we obviously, we talked about a couple of Christmases
Scrooged,
ago, didn't we?
Yeah.
So good in Scrooge.
She's the best ghost in Scrooge.
Yes.
She's so good in that movie.
A toaster!
There was talk of Kathleen Turner being suggested and maybe in talks for the role of Debbie Jelinski.
Oh, right.
No, I could see it.
Yeah.
Couldn't you?
Yes.
Absolutely. But no, Joan Cusack landed the part of Debbie Jelinski. Other than that, the main thing is, it really, you know, this was the end of the Addams Family on the big screen. I mean, obviously, you know, we'll get on to the fact that sadly Raul Julia passed away after filming this movie, so he would never have been able to play Gomez again. This being the last movie that was released in his lifetime, Street Fighter was obviously a movie we talked about at length on the Street Fighter episode, and that was a posthumous release, so he'd already passed at that point. But also, it just did not do as well. So the budget was $17 million more, and it made almost $100 million less. Barry Sonnenfeld puts this down to the fact that, because he says the first film is more romantic, and the second film, in his opinion, is funnier. But the part of the reason, because we championed marketing on Monday, boo marketing.
Bad marketing.
Boo marketing today. He said the marketing basically didn't suggest there was going to be any value added in going to see this sequel. He was pushing for pubert to be all over the marketing, because that was the new thing, a baby being in the family. And instead, it was all about, hey, we're back with the original Addams Family from the first movie. So people just didn't turn out. They felt they'd seen it. They felt they'd heard all the gags.
And some of the funniest moments in this film are just shots of pubert in various different outfits and get-ups and facial hair and hair on his head. And so those are perfect for a trailer. You just have a bunch of them in. I want to see that film. A baby in a Hannibal Lecter mask. A baby with a moustache.
Yep. Brilliant.
Sign me up.
100%. And I mean, he acknowledges, he says people love it more, as much or more than the first one. So he was really disappointed that this didn't do the business. We were talking about this on the walk in. Michael Jackson did a song for it. Various different names it comes under. The one I think I read was called Family Thing. What's it called? Yeah, Family Thing. You can find, so you listen to,
a version of it's been was released on an album, and it was called Is It Scary, was the song. It's quite good. But they shot a video for this.
Yeah, I heard. I've got the stuff about the video.
Yeah.
So, I mean, but right, well, let's get into this. So basically, there are two conflicting stories, or maybe the stories are linked. But obviously, allegations came out about Michael Jackson, abuse allegations around the time, the same year that this movie was coming out. So there's one story that is paramount going, we couldn't work out a contract with Michael. It seems kind of hard to believe that he would have been involved in the recording of a song for it if you weren't sure you were going to be able to work out the contract. Mm-hmm. So then there's the allegations that came out, and so they pulled him from it, is the other thing. The one thing that I got is the quote from Paul Rudnick, the writer about this, who says, I think he completed the video for it, but it was just a little too risky to include it in the final movie at that point. I think it involved him living in the Addams Family mansion and all his neighbours storming the place with pitchforks and torches, so it was a little too close.
Right. It's a bit on the nose.
The one thing I can't work out is how does... You know, there's a Michael Jackson joke in the Camp Chippewa
moment. Yeah, I don't get it.
So... Was that written in when he was still involved? And if so, was he cool with them going, he's terrifying?
Yeah.
Or would they have gone, oh, these allegations have come out, here's a Michael Jackson joke?
Yeah, to put real distance between us?
I don't know. Because don't they, isn't there Michael Jackson jokes in Men in Black as well, not long after this?
In Men in Black. He plays an alien on the screen that appears at MIB headquarters.
Yeah, but it's not him acting in it, is it? It's them saying the celebrities that are aliens, and he's one of them.
Yeah, but isn't it? I always thought it was him.
Oh, okay.
It?
Well, then I guess Sonnenfeld figured it out and worked with him soon after.
Either way, Michael Jackson is not on the soundtrack, and more's the shame because if you listen to the song, you heard it on an album. There's a leaked version on YouTube.
It's better than what they ended up with.
Yeah, it is. So. Aside from that, shall we just talk about this movie?
Well, I was just going to say a couple of things. I mean, it's this sad story of Barry Sonnenfeld, the fact that he had a choice between this and another film, because he got sent the script for Forrest Gump.
Oh.
And he told them, I like it, but let's change the main character from a big fat guy that's a really big running back to a thin guy that runs all the time, and I'll send it to Tom Hanks because I've shot big with him. Mm. So that's how it got going. He said, I had a choice between Forrest Gump or going back to the very first thing I'd ever directed. And now he throws someone else under the bus. He says, I was working with Michael J. Fox at the time, and I said, what should I do? And Michael said, you set the table with Adam's family, now you've got to go have dinner. So it's Michael Jackson's fault that Barry Sonnenfeld...
Wait, Michael J. Fox?
Sorry, Michael J. Fox. Okay. He had a flop with Adam's Family Values when he could have done Forrest Gump.
Wow.
And he didn't watch it for years. He said it took him years to watch it. I saw the movie. Only then could the healing begin. It's not the movie I would have made. Maybe mine would have been worse. Maybe it would have been better. It definitely would have been shorter. And just one last thing. I mentioned on Monday that Stanley Jaffe didn't find this funny, didn't find Adam's Family funny. Barry Sonnenfeld apparently had it written into his contract that when he was watching early cuts of the film, Stanley Jaffe had to watch them with his wife because he had no sense of humour and she did.
Wow.
That's fascinating.
Yeah.
So she'd laugh and then he'd laugh because she was having a good time and he felt relaxed and comfortable.
Or maybe he wouldn't laugh. He would just know what was funny based on his wife.
It's fascinating. There's a massive theory. Well, not a massive theory. There was a theory for a while. I read this in a book. A real book.
Our book.
Oh, I read a book.
Oh, easy, Albert Einstein.
About why female stand-ups struggled was because girls would be less likely to laugh at them. And so because they were less likely, because if they laughed at, if their boyfriends laughed at a female stand-up, girls might feel threatened by the fact that the boy was finding a woman on stage funny. And so if it was a female stand-up who was sort of making fun of being female.
Yeah.
Then the girls would laugh because it's sort of like this sort of sisterhood, which is why the material
is all
quite
about
often,
periods,
right? Exactly, yeah. Because then the boys wouldn't laugh because they didn't want to make their girlfriend feel like I'm laughing at another woman. It's this mad theory.
Yeah, there was something I read in our book about, which I'll send you because you'll like it, about why we are attracted to people who seem to share a sense of humour, and what's the point of that? Because as you imagine, cave people figuring this stuff out, did they crack jokes? And there's this theory that they did do sort of very rudimentary, not pranks or anything like that, but like trying to, when you think someone has the same sense of humour as you, very broadly, you think you see the world in the same way, and so you think, okay, there's a kinship there, and then it can sort of tip up. That's why you get, like, in movies sometimes, if we're showing a couple that, you know, they're wrong for each other, they're right for each other, it's based in comedy, because we get that as an audience. We're like, oh, you two are perfect for each other because you understand the same jokes. And the book was about, why is that even a thing?
Wow.
It's really interesting.
Mm.
I don't think I read a whole book. It's like, that's a lie. I think it was an article.
Okay. Oh, that's already more attractive to me because as I've just said, I've just read a book.
I don't even know why I said that. It wasn't a whole book. Right. It was a long article.
I'm in. Oh, wait. Long. How long? Right. Any more for any more, Christopher? Nope. Let's do this. So we start with Festa howling at the moon.
Oh, what an image.
This is great. And then Morticia says, I'm so excited about this. So Festa's howling at the moon, and then Morticia says, marvellous news, I'm going to have a baby. Right now.
Mm.
Is that a record for setting up the two plot strands in your movie in the fastest time? That is less than a minute to go, Festa's lonely, they're having a baby.
Yep.
Yeah, that's impressive.
A and B plot in less than 60 fucking seconds.
That's great.
madness.
Yeah, that's really good, actually. Yeah, it's a very good point.
It's so
it
fast.
It is a good point. Yeah.
You're like, got it. I'm in. That's everything.
Yeah. And we've got the theme tune in between those two, yes. 30 seconds on the organ with Lurch.
Thank God.
Oh, yeah. I was over the moon. I was like, oh, this is amazing. So then Morticia gives birth. Niles from Frasier, one of many cameos in this movie, David Hyde Pierce.
Well, it's not a cameo, is it? It's an actor who wasn't famous. Getting a non-speaking role, pretty much.
Was Frasier not? No, Frasier wasn't,
was
it?
I think so. No, I had to go back and watch it to make sure it was him. Yeah. That was definitely one of those where it's in the cast list here, but I did not clock that.
Yeah. Someone needs to alter the Wikipedia then because it goes cameos by. Someone's like, I'm a big Frasier
fan. I don't think Nathan Lane was as famous as that. But that birth scene, they had to film her standing up because they wanted to keep her look perfect.
Yeah.
And if she's lying down, the hair's going to... Yeah,
it's so funny.
So, Morticia gives birth. We get some great baby-related visual gags throughout this. You just mentioned some that should have been featured in the trailer. The terrifying teddy bear is the first great one.
Such a good teddy bear. I love it when they're sitting with the kids... And Gomez, as their daddy's like, why do you hate the baby? It's like, such a good line. Because that chat, all that stuff about displacement, actually, and, you know, kids feeling pushed out, and then Wednesday leaning into that with their brother and going, one of us has to die, is all like real things that you would recognise in a family. But no one would say to the kids, why do you hate the baby? That's so brilliant.
In fairness, they have just, in another great visual gag, dropped the baby off the roof of the building and Gomez, by accident, catches it, which leads him to go... Children, why do you hate the baby?
The knives suspended above the crib.
Oh, yeah.
The mobile of knives, yeah. Festa reading a book, Strange Men and the Women Who Avoid Them. all this is quite quickfire until we get our first meatier, longer form gag, which it's just brilliant. Sending the baby dressed as Marie Antoinette to the guillotine. I still cannot tell you why Wednesday's delivery of the line, woe to the Republic, it gets me every time. It's brilliant.
And that, and the tiny hand stopping the guillotine.
Oh, yeah.
I like that. But then can Pubert not die? Is that the thing? Why can his tiny hand stop the guillotine?
Come on.
It doesn't matter. But then later, it doesn't matter. You're right. But then it was like, he was never under threat. Like, if they dropped him off the building and his dad hadn't caught him, maybe he would have bounced, like they said. I don't know. But fine.
I don't know what you're talking about.
It doesn't matter.
Try any of this.
I only have one, I think, I'm just checking, one more bit left. No, they were all right.
I thought you were going to say, they're not cats. I thought, I've only got one more life left on one of the twins. I used up eight and now I've got one, so I won't do the Marie Antoinette sketch with Mark this evening that we've been working on, a whole play. Yeah, so I love that. The auditioning of the nannies is good. Not a cameo, but did you recognise the first one? Hippy Dippy environmentalist?
Cynthia Nixon
there. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It is of its time, though, which is like, kids, we're going to talk about the environment. Mm. And you're supposed to think, what a dweeb, rather than where we are now.
It is quite dweeby.
She'd obviously go on to star in...
Are you joking?
I've only ever seen one episode.
Okay. Of... The girls thing.
Seinfeld.
Frasier. She's in Sex and the City, everyone.
Or is it Sex and the City?
Oh, it's Sex and the...
No,
what?
It's Sex in the City.
Is it? Wait, I never... I didn't,
why
I
have
didn't,
you done this?
I didn't love it.
I only saw one episode, so I...
It's not my cup of tea.
The one episode I saw, which put me off ever watching it again, was horrible. It was so dark, because I thought it was a comedy, and I started watching it, and the actress who played...
Kim Cattrall?
No, she's not one of the main cast. She was in Third Rock from the Sun. His lieutenant.
Christina. Kristen something.
Fuck.
Anyway. So, I'm watching this episode and I'm led to believe it's a comedy. It's sort of lighthearted, maybe a little bit raunchy because it's got sex in the title. But she does cocaine in the toilet of a skyscraper at a party, falls out of the window and dies.
Right.
How is that funny?
I don't know. It wasn't my cup of tea,
So. That's more the and the city. It's Sex and the City. It's one of those Mandela effect things where we all think it's Sex in the City, but it was Sex and the City.
Okay. So it was either sexy or people being killed in the city.
In horrible ways.
Killed and the city.
I mean, to be fair, it was a comedy drama.
Oh, okay. I didn't like that episode. So that's my review. am I late to the party? So, in walks Joan Cusack as Debbie Jelinski, claiming to be from the agency, to which Gomez says, the agency? But they said no one else was available. They suggested a Doberman. Is that the little critter? No, this is our baby.
And she said, she says she definitely isn't a homicidal maniac.
Yeah. Then possibly one of the funniest gags in the film, Morticia and Gomez are telling Debbie the names they went through for the baby. Lucifer, Benito, Mao. Then we came to our senses. Something simple. Something a child could live with. Pubert.
Which was apparently what Charles Adams wanted to call Pugsley originally, and the New Yorker told him he couldn't.
Oh, because it was too much for the time, was it?
I think it's, but yeah, probably.
Okay. So that's weird. It's just a stage of adolescence.
Do you want to know how they got Pubert to crawl right where they needed him to crawl?
Oh, well, I tell you what, like, I'm glad you're going to tell me this, because there's a shot right at the end where it's a fucking robot baby, and it's like, why don't you just get the real baby to do it?
I don't know. But isn't he's crawling, the robot baby's crawling when something gives way behind him, like the floor gives way.
It's terrifying.
It's, yeah, there's a stunt going on around it, so obviously they're using a robot baby. Yeah. I'm
worried
about
you. They're not allowed
to put babies in danger. I didn't actually notice. I just saw a baby crawling out of a room and I was obsessed with it. I was like, is that a robot baby? No. Look how scary that is.
Putting babies in danger is a big no-no. On movie sets and in real life.
Yeah. I did wonder, though, because at one point, Pubert, the real baby...
I didn't think I'd need to say it.
...is on top of the stairs. Mm. And is Pubert's handler...
You've just got lucky so far.
It feels like it sometimes. So many near misses. We do end up in A&E quite a lot.
Yeah, you do.
We do. But it's a numbers game, isn't it? Like, there's three of them, like I always say.
So Pubert's handler.
Your handler, yeah. Handler. Pubert's handler. When Pubert's at the top of the staircase.
Wrangler.
It's a real big staircase, and it's like the baby, it's a very young, the twins, aren't they? And the actors, the baby actors are twins. They're very young and they could fall down those stairs. I did want to see. I was thinking as a concerned parent.
I don't know whether you'll be able to tell me. I don't know if you've ever used this for shits and giggles.
Go on.
At home. They tied Cheerios to strings and
dragged it to move.
To get it to move.
Like
yeah.
a dog. That's awesome.
That would work on me.
Yeah.
Oh my God, that's brilliant. Mm.
These Adams men. Where do you find them? It needs to be damp. Every single line is gold. It's brilliant. I love it. Fester, I hope that one day you'll know the indescribable joy of having children and paying someone else to raise them.
So good. It's such a dig.
Yeah, I decided to try and outdo Chris quoting Monday's movie by just referencing every quote that moves the plot on in some way throughout this film.
Just so we know. There's a joke coming up that you could explain to me because it's around this point.
Mm.
Fester and Gomez are in Fester's bedroom and it might be that point where he says about the joy, the indescribable joy thing.
Mm.
And Fester's got a magazine. Actually,
oh my God.
It says like a porn mag or something. Yeah. And then they say, Mom?
The joke. But yeah, it's one of the moments. Remember I said this on Monday where the script goes for a gag without thinking of how much damage it does to your image of the family.
So I obviously don't remember that from when I was a child. But this time I was like, oh, I don't like that.
Overall, I think Paul Rudnick's script in this movie is better than the work he did on the script on the first movie. I do think pound for pound, this is a funnier script. But that is one of a couple of examples where, like I said, I just think it's like you thought that was funny and you didn't think about the bigger picture because
the kids that are watching it, maybe.
Well, not even just that, but as we established on Monday, we love the Addams family. They're a beautiful unit for all their flaws and foibles and everything. But you just can't imagine. That sort of feels like a taking that gag too far or undoing that.
And also, it's like one for the grown-ups. Like, good kids' films have got one for the grown-ups as well. Mm. But the grown-ups that love this film aren't looking for that sort of humour, I think, from this family. That makes sense.
No.
There's another joke about that hasn't aged very well, but like Fester wants a woman and Gomez says, oh, one that won't press charges this time. And it's like, oh, that's a strange thing to think about.
Yep.
It's good.
Also, I always find the sexy girl in the cake who was going to burst out of the stag do who's been cooked. That always makes me feel
uncomfortable.
And is
there a joke? But again,
leaves a bad taste in my mouth. As we're eating that cake.
I may have overreached and misinterpreted something, but is there a joke about Fester knowing physical love and his brother says apart from with thing? Did you see that joke?
Oh, I missed that one.
Did you see it? Have I done that thing?
I did write down. You need
are
to
you
have
reaching.
A, you need to have a, around.
You see, I was thinking. Oh God, that's so Freudian.
I'm one of my changes could be you need to have a thing wanking someone off joke.
Wow, I think it's in there, Chris. I'm so
yeah. I mean, he gets sucked. He gets sucked off, doesn't he? Thing.
He gets his finger sucked.
Yeah, but
that's all he's got, though.
He is fingers. Yeah,
he's all fingers, mate.
But I mean, if they have the same sensitivity as a
what? You know, a growth.
When did you call it a growth?
No, I called it a length.
A length. That still makes me laugh. It makes me think of it going bang,
mine does.
Yeah.
Oh, those old wooden rulers.
A lead, you know, not like a lead block.
Oh, not like a balloon popping.
Sorry.
Okay. Right then. So anyway, we find out that Debbie Jelinski is the Black Widow. She's going to marry a murder fester for his money. Wednesday is on to her, disguised as wallpaper. So Debbie has the kids shipped off to Camp Chippewa in one of the film's most inspired decisions, a camp for privileged young adults. They meet Amanda Buckman, who definitely was the scout girl from Mondays.
Yeah, let's go with that. Yeah.
I'm sort of really leaning into your theory, Chris, that this is a shared universe.
Mm.
Hot take.
Mm. Mm. Even if you look closely at the titles, there are similarities.
No, they're the Men in Black titles. You're getting confused.
But let's welcome two very wonderful additions to the Addams universe, which is Peter McNichol and Christine Baranski as Gary Granger and Becky Martin Granger.
They're great.
I was sold the minute they did that jump and clap at the start. Peter Nichol, obviously, I recognised when I watched this from...
Ghostbusters 2.
Yeah.
He's Vigo. You are like the buzzing of flies to him.
I can't unsee... You know what I'm like for Ghostbusters? I love him in this, but it's hard for me to unsee Ghostbusters 2.
Yeah, well, while we're on the 90s female-led comedy dramas, Ally McBeal, he was in that, wasn't he?
Oh, my God, of course. Mm,
Yeah. I watched an episode of that once.
Did you?
Yeah. Woman fell out of a skyscraper and died. It's not what I expected at all.
You should watch Third Rock from the Sun. Happens in that.
Right, where are we? We get this movie's version of the Mamushka, which is where Gomez and Tish dance at the restaurant. I think it's better. This is some of my favourite Fester stuff in both movies. The breadsticks.
Just
the visual image of the breadsticks. Nose. Going up, coming out, going up again.
It's the bit where he doesn't expect her to turn back and he's just sort of sitting forlorn, holding the breadsticks after his first attempt. And then she turns back and he can't get them in quick enough. He's trying to get them in and she then turns back and he's like, oh, I missed my window. It's just such good character work for Fester. Honestly, genuinely, I, with this movie, like the holy trinity of the writing, the direction, the performances, it's almost perfect. It's so good. So, we've got these two stories running parallel, vaguely linked. Fester gets engaged. I'm prepared to make the ultimate sacrifice. A goat.
But do you mean in terms of the where the thing was helping Fester downstairs?
That's what I heard.
Do you mean the moment where Deb tells Fester she's a virgin and Fester's got no idea what that is, and then he says, "Oh, you mean with another person?"
No, that reinforced the joke. So I recognise that. But then I'd heard a joke earlier where his brother says to him something about Thing helping him out.
Fair enough.
What is it that you heard thinking? Because I can't remember, so I'm interested to know. So he says, what's the line?
I can't remember. That's true. I can't remember. I thought you might, like, it's something about you. Oh, you wait till you find the indescribable joy of knowing a woman in that way or something. And the thing with Thing doesn't count.
Okay.
That's something like that.
Fair enough.
It won't be the thing with Thing, because that's poor writing.
Does Thing wank off Fester?
I can't put that in. Google. My computer belongs to work. I can't.
Thing provides Uncle Fester with sexual release. I found a Reddit thread you'll be pleased to hear. So
great.
This might bring confirmation to your inquiry. If you've seen Addams Family Values, Uncle Fester falls for the erotic new nanny, Debbie, love Reddit, and gushes about his lust to Gomez with the following dialogue. Uncle Fester, I have needs. Gomez, there's Thing. Thing shudders, to which Fester retorts he needs to be more like a head and body.
The
implication being that Thing does something for him beyond companionship.
Yes, that's the scene.
Okay.
Near the end of the film, Thing even saves Fester, suggesting a strong family bond, or perhaps something a little more, as Thing is capable of feelings like love and lust, seeing as earlier Debbie made him shudder with desire. If it's obvious, it's one of those things that went over my head as a kid. Okay.
At the end, I guess they're implying that he's missing Fester's Fester.
Just let that one just sit there
they
for
can't,
a while.
They can't all be gold.
No, I think I forgot to take a break on this show.
You did.
Shall we take one now?
Probably a bit late.
All right, fine.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember. Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad was thinking, like, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And then we'll weigh around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Kate girl cooked to death, covered that. Wednesday in Pugsley gets sent to the Harmony Hut. We've covered this weird picture of Michael Jackson's Heal the World, which scares the life out of Joel, because they've met up with Joel now, other than Camp Kids.
Yeah, because Joel's dad in the script was described as pathetic, shy, pale and allergic. And so Scott Rudin insisted that Barry Sonnenfeld played him. Scott Rudin. Fucking bullies.
cousin it, hosts the wedding, and then Festa and Debbie are off on their Hawaii honeymoon, and she fails to kill him for the first time, so instead uses sex to subjugate him. And it works.
Yeah.
It works.
Yeah, I mean, she's got some strange dialogue here, hasn't she? She says if they do it, he can never see his family again.
Mm.
Because if she pictures them in their lives, she can't achieve orgasm, is basically what she says without saying that.
She does more. She does say, she says, I can't achieve, and that's
and
the...
And she goes, dot, dot, dot.
Yeah.
But she doesn't say orgasm. That's sort of, it's just like, that's... And then she's touching him. Like, this is what I didn't like. It felt too risque, her sort of... Well, she's touching him. We don't see where she's touching him, but he starts basically orgasming himself.
His face, yeah.
And it's like, oh, I agree with you. I don't need to think about them coming.
Jesus Christ! Wow. Nothing. No, it's fine. Of course you should be able to use that language. Sorry, I just wasn't... I was in a different headspace. That's... Thank you for being honest.
Sometimes you make it feel like therapy. Well done, Chris. That was great. You said coming. How does that feel?
This is a safe space.
It's not.
I like after the wedding, Pubert having a hangover and wearing sunglasses and needing hair of the dog.
Yeah.
The idea of a drunk baby makes me laugh.
Would you have liked to... I would have liked to... You know, this is because I like a wedding comedy. Mm. When they're like, we're engaged, and then it's almost straight away we're at a wedding, and I like build up to weddings. I like... Because you get the stag do, but I would have liked the hen
right
do.
One.
Well, it's, you're funny.
It's like what I said in the first film, though. You've got this opportunity with all the extended Addams family.
Yeah.
You can have real fun with all these other creatures showing up and being weird.
Absolutely. Do you know what the cocktail was, the hangover cure that Gomez was making?
It's a prairie oyster.
Yeah, thought you'd know. I wrote down. I bet you know this.
I've never drunk one, though. I couldn't.
So, just to clarify, a prairie oyster is vodka, raw eggs, not often egg yolk, and hot sauce.
What?
Yeah.
I can't.
It's
what's
called
wrong with people?
It's called a prairie oyster because it has the sensation
texture,
of swallowing an oyster. I'd go for that.
Would you?
No. All right, that's what we're doing. We're going to Waterloo straight after this, and you're having one of them.
And
then going down a slide.
Yeah.
The fun factory full of prairie oysters. I'm in. What's it called again? Brewdog Waterloo.
It's just called Brewdog. Well, it's probably not, but it also might be.
Yeah, yeah. But you're absolutely right, Chris. That gag works three times because, first of all, you think, wow, that's something Gomez is having for breakfast. Then it's like, oh, he's giving it to the baby. And then you realise it's a hangover cure. It's just good.
Rule of three.
Rule of three. Festa and Debbie return from Hawaii. Ian Abercrombie. I recognised him, the driver. He's like barely in it for a second. Mm. He's got just such a memorable face. I think he's in Army of Darkness and Seinfeld. Anyway,
he's driving a hearse.
Oh, yeah.
Back at camp, Joel Wednesday and Pugsley compare serial killer trading cards. Does anyone remember Amanda Fisher?
Amy Fisher.
Amy Fisher, sorry.
I had to look it up because I didn't... There's been a few more moments in this film which I haven't enjoyed because I've been taken out of the film. So I've been taken out of like the love that you feel for the family with those sort of sexual overtones. And then it felt like... it's a joke I didn't get because I don't know who Amy Fisher is.
Well, it's basically... It's one of those gags that age probably within 2 years. She was in the news. She was called the Long Island Lolita.
Mm. I read about it, and I don't know.
Drew Barrymore played her in a movie.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, yeah. There were two. There were like it was one of those cases where there were two warring Amy Fisher movies came out at the same time, TV movies. But
why have we not clashed them?
Yeah,
we could do. I always remember the guy that she the boyfriend that she attacked was Joey Buttafuoco.
Yeah. Mm.
No, she didn't attack him. It was the wife of Joey Buttafuoco, Mary Jo Buttafuoco, who she attacked because she was apparently having an affair with Joey Buttafuoco. Mm. Mm-hmm. I'll never get tired of saying that surname.
No, and then she went to Paul.
She did?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Why not?
And why not?
Yeah, exactly.
But I don't... When you say, we've talked about when spoof does it and it's fine because they're meant to have a really short shelf life and so it's okay. But in a film like this... Because I've loved it for such a long time, I was just disappointed to see a joke that dated it so quickly. Mm. And also, I didn't understand then and I don't understand now and all the rest of it.
Yep. Some of the jokes and the music date this film.
It's very US market specific, just to get into some more, into the granularity of it. In the UK, we don't really get that, do we?
No. No, we don't.
We're left out of that conversation.
Yeah. I hate that.
I hate it.
I bet you do. I'm left out of a conversation.
Shut up, you.
But it's not actually the button. It's not like the final gag, because obviously they find the Black Widow card and they know Festa is in danger. There's a bit that felt uncomfortable now, where the Grangers are casting the play and go through all the popular kids and getting the names wrong. I guess it's kind of accurate and it fits with this sort of white privileged camp that they're at.
It's difficult,
it
though,
sits
because...
badly, though.
Yeah.
It felt wrong in the film. I've read since that the suggestion was that these people are awful. They're so racist, they can't even pronounce someone foreign's name. But it doesn't come off that way in the film. It feels like we're laughing at the kid almost.
Yeah, definitely.
And so...
Because you're not supposed to like a Becky and I've forgotten his name, but that's fine. You already don't like them, so you don't need to be like, oh, and also they're also racist. Hooray! Mm. Like that's another reason to not like them. It just feels really off.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. Odd moment because, yeah, I mean, you aren't meant to like them, but you're meant to be able to laugh with them.
Yeah.
Not laugh with them, laugh at them. And this is sort of not funny.
No.
Wednesday's face is hilarious, though, when she's cast as Pocahontas.
Yeah.
And she just sticks her head up from behind the bleachers. Just utter shock on her face, because you've never seen Wednesday look shocked before.
Yep.
We see another great face coming up in a moment as well. Debbie won't let Festa see his family still. He's under a spell because of sex. He's actually the one going, go away! Leave me alone! Because he's loving sex. She's, what happens? What happens?
Just a warning, kids.
Yeah,
are going to love it.
Whatever freedoms you think you have now, just wait for that sex to hit.
15-year-old me was jealous of Festa.
Right.
It looked brilliant.
She's brilliant.
Just so brilliant.
Do what you will, Deb.
Sex brilliant. So... Just clarify for me, why doesn't she want... I couldn't work out. I wrote it down and then I think I know what the answer is, but I just want to check. She doesn't want Festa to see his family again because they'll work out that what... She's got his money now, clearly, because she's got this house. So he's providing her with all this money. Mm. So
they'll win him back.
Okay.
They'll win him back because she can see that they all love each other so much. So she's got to keep him to herself.
Yeah. Got you. Nathan Lane... Cameo.
Soon to be world famous Nathan Lane.
He would go on to play Gomez in the Broadway musical production of The Addams Family, though.
Nice.
But that's a big old Nathan Lane cameo. How'd they get him? Wednesday, Pugsley and Joel try and escape, but then they get brainwashed by Disney films. Or as Joel calls them, Disney films. They're not all Disney films.
No, not are they? No.
No, Sound of Music, Brady Bunch.
Annie.
Mm. Yeah.
But they're transformed, and Wednesday's smile.
So good.
Give that girl an Oscar.
Yeah,
she's scaring me.
It's wonderful. So Festa's absence, here we go, just a curveball. Festa's absence has made pubert cherubic.
I don't like this, because it's a clock for the sake of it. Like, if we don't get our brother back, the baby will turn. But you already want your brother back. I suppose maybe they were conscious of it's too close to the first film, which is, are you my brother? Are you not my brother? So they put a false clock on it.
Yeah. You're Mr. Debbie. okay, fine. I get that. But doesn't Gomez say something like, I'm worried he's going to become a lawyer? Isn't Gomez a lawyer? I swear Gomez was a lawyer. I mean, going back to the original TV series.
God, I don't know.
No,
I mean, you were fans of the TV series.
The one that I loved and watched every week.
The ones that you two just wouldn't shut up about on Monday's episode. Thought Gomez was a lawyer. Can you confirm or deny?
Yeah, I can confirm.
Tully.
They were in business together.
Yeah. Tully's a lawyer.
Yeah, say Tully another time. Yeah. So we get the crowning glory of Camp Chippewa. Gary's vision.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, first of all, the song "Eat Me."
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, you've seen the movie Creep. That right. A bit more uncomfortable, casual racism from Amanda Buckman's parents this time, which is the same. It gives me the same feel as when the Grangers did it earlier. But then Wednesday going off script, her speech, and ending with, I've decided to scalp you and burn your village to the ground. This play that goes wrong. Joel's parents are there, like you said, played by Barry Sonnenfeld. it's just, I just love it. We see Debbie having a great time in a bar with lots of sailors.
I love that scene. Yeah. It's mad.
Macho man.
Because she's going and she's waiting for it. But they must, like, what can we show Debbie doing? You don't have to show her doing anything, to be honest. She can just be sitting there waiting for the house to blow up. Let's put her in a bar full of sailors.
It's the joke itself, though, is like you think, oh, wow, they're all singing at Debbie because she's voluptuous and gorgeous and sitting on this bar, lording it over them. And then the minute that she's gone, they just immediately, this is another woman, an older woman walks by, yeah, and they stop, they pick her up and start doing it to her.
And yeah, it's a weird song choice, isn't it? Macho Man, yeah, by the Village People. Exactly, it would suggest, yeah, they wouldn't be interested in these women.
Oh, well, I thought maybe she's got, you know, a woman like that might go down brilliantly in a gay bar kind of thing. And I thought it was that, but then I don't know if that might be a bit too much for the times, you know, the sort of early 90s, whatever. Mm. But it still works if you think either way.
And a cameo from Tony Shalhoub.
Yes.
A non-cameo. Yeah, the soon-to-be-famous, yeah, Tony Shalhoub.
Yeah, the star of upcoming series 20 years later, Monk. Tony Shalhoub, yeah. I mean, this movie is literally chock full of cameos.
Isn't it?
I mean, after the success of the first film, why wouldn't all these big stars want to join the Addams Family party? Mad. David Hyde Pierce, wow. Right. She blows Fester up, and then it's very, I think I've seen this gag before, but it's very funny. Help. Saying it very quietly. But he survived because he's an Addams and you just can't kill him, which makes the end of the movie seem ridiculous that she's got them all strapped in these chairs. And we've talked about this structurally. Isn't it amazing how many movies, regardless of what the frickin' movie is, puts a car chase in at exactly the same time, yeah, same point in the structure? So sure, we've got a car chase here.
I guess we had that in the first film.
Yeah,
yeah,
we did.
Yeah.
It's the same.
Yeah.
Every movie requires a car chase. So if you're ever writing a movie, make sure
you've
got
the car chase.
We went run.
Yep, we did.
Of course we did.
Literally did.
at this point in the film.
Because I said, need one there.
Because he said you had to.
Yeah.
Okay.
To the airport.
Oh no, I don't do like that.
There we go. Yeah. I knew I'd get around.
You did like it.
I love a race to the airport.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's got everything. In fact, it's almost too familiar.
Woo! Like this. This got made.
Yeah, exactly. But this is a sequel.
Oh, yeah.
It's
a shared universe.
Yeah, change the title to Addams Family 3. Right, Wednesday's Kiss with fellow Camp Chippewa camper Joel. Does it happen here?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it happens here. I thought it did. This is played by Dave Krumholtz. This was his first on-screen kiss, as it was for Christina Ricci. And he said, I was nervous about it. I hadn't kissed too many. So it was her first on-screen kiss. Both her first on-screen kisses.
It's not even a
great story. that's the line. That's the punchline. That's what she said. Uh-huh. She said, spit it out, mate, because he put his tongue in. What amazing. No, that's not it. That's not it. He said, I hadn't kissed too many girls, period. So it was one of my first kisses. If you look at it, it's like we touched lips. It's very, very innocent. But I remember Christina complaining that I had peach fuzz on my upper lip. She didn't like that. And it made me really self-conscious.
Oh, come on, Richie. Sort it out.
So the family are all in electric chairs. We get a truly wonderful villain speech.
It's so good.
From Debbie Jelinski.
It makes no sense and it doesn't quite qualify as Act 3 has begun, but it's still brilliant.
It's a speech combined with a PowerPoint presentation.
It's a PowerPoint presentation, which I normally hate. I love this.
Malibu Barbie. So this is from Rudnick. He says of this, Joan Cusack is just bliss as Debbie. I was on the set the day we were shooting that monologue and she's talking about Malibu Barbie. People were stuffing paper cups in their mouths to stop themselves laughing because Joan was sublime. Watching her is a gift.
Don't I deserve love and jewelry?
And we get this Rube Goldberg style ending, the roller skate. See, it does tick its boxes. We get the roller skate coming back. The thing was on at the start that seemed a little bit pointless, like they were going, yeah, look, he's better this thing.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Time.
The CGI's fixed.
I think it was that. And then they were like, stick the baby on it at the end as well. Debbie gets fried, which is pretty dark, but fitting because she's a murderer. And then Joel says that line I mentioned at the start. He says to Wednesday, your family's really interesting. Your parents are so involved with each other, which I just think is a wonderful, wonderful line.
Such a grown-up thing to say. I'm confused by the end, the very end beat.
Which
so,
is,
so he says to her, oh, would you ever think about getting married? And she says, oh, something like, oh, I pity my husband, or I'd scare him to death. And he's and he they're really cute together. And I love this romance and that she's quite nervous and he's quite nervous and whatever. And then and they talk back to each other. So she says, I'd scare my husband to death. And he goes, no, you wouldn't, which is nice. Mm. And then he goes to Debbie's grave and weirdly apologises to Debbie. And then a hand shoots up through the soil. And that's the last shot of the film. And it's like, what's this?
Well, it's because she's got a sense of humor. It's what it, she's not changed just because she's in love. Wednesday is still hilarious.
Okay.
It's not a real hand. It's a prank that Wednesday has set
up. But does that mean the whole film, the emotional beat of the final scene is so important, even if you're not got your eye on the third part, is the whole point of the film that Wednesday has grown up and got a boyfriend?
Great question, Chris.
As she asked you.
I know.
Well, let's refer it back. So the point of the first film, you get. We would like a sequel, and this family is so happy that they're going to have a baby, and you're like, hooray! But this beat, you're like, oh, okay, cool. But
I took it as like, you know, he'd signed up for a relationship with an Adams.
Well, he's dressed as Gomez now. Now, so he's one of them now.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So the last shot should just
be every day.
The hand comes up. He's scared. You pull back. Wednesday's parents and brother are on the step and they're like, welcome to the family. And then they all go inside.
That would be better.
Okay.
That would be better.
Great.
That's my change.
And what's your change, Chris? We've just jumped a bit, but...
it's not quite the end of the film, though, because then we've got tag team doing whoop, there it is, Adam's family.
Yes.
How much did they get paid? Tag team, we want you to do the theme song. We've just lost Jacko. We want you to do the theme tune. Here's £500,000. And they just re-record, whoop, there it is, but add the name Adams into it.
Yeah.
That is easy money, isn't it?
When you've got a hit, you've got a hit, Chris.
And when the producers heard it, surely they're like, oh, maybe we'll just use the, you know?
We can. and everyone loves it.
We've still got it. Yeah.
I mean, you want to do the rant that I did about the A-Team theme, but about the Adams family.
I know,
theme,
I should, you know. Shouldn't I?
Oh, if he wants to be famous.
Big on you, big on TikTok.
You want to be big on TikTok.
It's absolutely huge.
Is it blowing up?
My life has changed.
Has it?
Yeah, the endorsements.
Are you very wealthy now?
Wealthier than I was, yeah. So, it's been pretty good. I just thought you'd have taken this opportunity, Chris, because if you're passionate about it, you know, there's money to be made. Right then, that is the end. I thought it was just a shit, not a shit, but just a carry gag that they were like,
I thought it was as well.
Oh, okay.
I think that's all it is.
No, okay. Yeah. But also, I didn't understand why Jerry was laying flowers at Deb's grave.
Because she's still a human, Chris. She's just she was a difficult person.
What interactions has Jerry had with Deb?
Joel,
sorry.
Sorry.
I called him Jerry all the way through my notes.
Oh. He's had none.
Okay. The answer is none. Okay. That's the first time we've ever met. So that's why. It's a weird beat,
yes.
Isn't it?
Yeah, we're agreed.
Good.
Before we do the bits, though, everything comes full circle this month. Because a new TV series called Wednesday is launching on Netflix and it's directed by Tim Burton, who they wanted for the original movie.
Yeah.
And it stars Christina Ricci
as?
I'm not allowed to say. I don't know if they've announced it yet. I've seen it, but I've signed something that says I'm not allowed to talk about it till mid-November.
Well, you've just fucked that.
So...
Well, I will or won't look forward to that.
You can say. I'm not saying it. Good, yeah, look forward to it.
I haven't signed anything. Didn't this come up recently? This was a massive issue online where someone took someone and the person who'd been invited brought a plus one and the person who'd gone to a Disney screening, it was like, I can't remember, it was one of the recent Disney movies, one of the big releases. He basically was invited to a Disney screening as a plus one and because the person who took him had signed an NDA, but no one put one in front of him. So he went off the following day and went, I'm going to talk all about it. And then was like, what have you got a problem with? I didn't sign an NDA. And it was all a big hoo-ha because it's like, well, kind of, if you go with someone who has, the same rule applies. But did you sign it? No. Anyway. All right, then. Let's do the bits. So what's your best scene, Vicky?
Wednesday's speech during the play.
What bit particularly?
Well, a bit. So I said this to you last week. And I was like, oh, maybe I'm saying that and I haven't revisited the film and maybe I won't feel as strongly about it. But her talking about, in years to come, my people, which is a little bit indelicate because she's not an Indigenous person, but whatever, like, just skipping over that for a second, and talking about the colonialism, colonialization, That's the very first time I'd ever heard, I'm even saying an alternative narrative is disrespectful because it's not an alternative narrative. I just had no idea. I was 12 and I thought that the pilgrims went over there and it was a case of like few teething problems, but essentially everything was fine. And I had no idea. And that profoundly affected me because I was like, oh, there are other versions of history that maybe I'm not being exposed to. And then I sought them out. No, I didn't. I just forgot about that for years. But isn't it amazing that a kid's movie could be like, oh my God, okay.
Could you actually pinpoint that moment as the moment that you gained this inquisitive mind of yours?
Because I was a dummy till I was 12.
not at all. I'm surprised you knew about the pilgrim story in Thanksgiving at 12 years old.
Yeah, but only the basics, which is...
We didn't do that at school.
No, it's just from telly and films and stuff like that. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know.
Pocahontas, but probably.
Probably. Yeah, which is why I thought it was basically fine. Yep. So I love that. I mean, but also, bear in mind, when I was 12 and watched the film, the scene it worked for me on all those levels, but you could come away from it going, well, that's actually quite serious and maybe it wasn't fun, but it is a very well-directed and it's a very funny scene. And that final shot where she's being, like, rowed through the waters, that's just so... And it's like... The shimmer of the haze of the fire. Mm. That's so good.
Yeah. Looks great.
Apparently, they had to add that scene of Pubert flying past Amanda's plane because the studio was worried that people would have thought that she's actually killed Amanda in this scene.
I think it was a smart move.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
I do think it was a smart move because I
would have liked it if she'd killed her. That's fine.
Yeah. What's your best scene then?
Well, it's the same, obviously. It's the stage show from the first film.
Yeah,
the stage show. It's just the same scene.
100%.
I guess when they start pouring the gasoline is when I'm really into it.
Yeah,
it's nice of the
another level.
The bullied kids, the kids, the unpopular kids rising up and winning the day and sort of Wednesday leading them to victory. I think it's bigger, it's better than the play in the first film, in my opinion. What's your most valuable whatever, Chris?
I've got two here and I reckon one of you is going to pick the other one. So I'm going to say Pubert. Pubert, I just thought was phenomenal. And I can't get enough of that baby.
They're so happy, those babies.
Well, if you put a moustache on a baby, they do tend to be happy.
They'll do anything you want.
They'll do anything for Cheerios.
Yeah, put a moustache and Cheerios on fishing wire. Just bosh.
So many scenes of people trying to kill a baby. I loved it.
It's the next live show. When we do another live show... We're going to get a baby, put a little tash on it, get some Cheerios on fishing wire. You're going to see that baby do things you've never seen a baby do before.
Yep.
Great. B.
It's Joan Cusack, yes. Though. Yep. So I really wanted to give it at least once to Christopher Lloyd, and it would be this time rather than last time, but she's too good. There you go.
Fine. She's fine. Good. She's absolutely amazing. Mine is the line that I'm mentioning for the final time now. Your family is really interesting. Your parents are so involved with each other. It was that moment that I sort of went back and thought about exactly how I felt about the Adams family. And obviously we talked about Tish and Gomez's relationship, but I touched on it on Monday. I'm almost jealous watching them. Because,
I'm jealous. I can admit that.
Honestly, they just seem like such a brilliant family who are all so great together, respect each other, content playing their games. When it comes to scenes, when even the editing, you'll sort of join a scene and Gomez will be throwing knives with Lurch at a dartboard. And it's like they're all entertaining themselves all the time, quite happy in their own company, happy in each other's company. So, I just think both films... capture that wonderful thing of a family that enjoy each other. And I love that about it. So, that's mine. But really, Christopher Lloyd is Fester. So, what's your change, Chris?
This is a change I have a lot of the time. I'd be interested to watch a version of this film where you shift Deb's reveal to later in the movie. So rather than have the pilot from Airplane tell us on the telly that she's there to kill him. Because I always like finding out about these things a bit later, but maybe it doesn't work in a comedy. So my actual change...
An actual cameo that I didn't include. the one real cameo, and I skipped over it.
I'd have them go to Camp Custer rather than Camp Chippewa, because I think it doesn't matter what the camp is or where it is for them to do a Pocahontas pageant. And you've set Camp Custer up in the first film, and I think you could have some fun with some stuff that Gomez and Festa might have left behind, things they've buried, things they've done. I think you could have fun drawing parallels and maybe having, because I really would love to see flashbacks to Festa and Gomez running around causing trouble at camp. And so I just think I would connect it to the first film that way.
Wasn't Camp Custer Young Offenders, though? It was for bad people. So then Wednesday and Pugsley would be surrounded by their equivalents as opposed to nice kids who they can turn bad.
All right, so it's a terrible change. Get rid of it, Chris.
B, dig us out of this hole.
Okay, two things. The kids can't... Pugsley and Wednesday try to escape and are stopped, but then Wednesday says to Joel, will you come to this wedding with me? I've got a pass. You can't just leave the camp and then go back again. You leave once and that's it.
100%. I've got the same thing. It's ridiculous because they're just let out. And then they go back.
Yes, it's not good.
Nope.
So this is a tiny thing, and you know how much I love a makeover. When we first meet Debbie, she's in bright white. And then what I think should happen is, as she's ensconcing herself within the family, it should get sort of greyer and greyer and greyer to prove that she's worming her way into their affections. So that when we get to the wedding, she's fully goth, just this amazing black wedding dress, and she's goth Debbie. And then the minute she gets to Hawaii, she's back in her pastels and her boobs and all the rest of it. Because I wanted to see her in her finery, and I wanted her finery to not look like her. I wanted it to be just this amazing sort of... I'm just going to say slutty goth, and that's what I wanted.
Say it again, actually. That's good. Yeah, I like that. I like that. You love a makeover.
I do.
You just love a makeover. Yeah, mine's the same as yours. I mean, I take out the mum centrefold gag in the jazz mag.
as no one says. But I like it.
In the jazz mag.
That's nice.
It makes me feel weird. It's a cheap gag. It makes no sense that they go there and back again. There and back again. Right then. That is Adam's Family Values. Ooh, I'm interested to see where it goes this week.
Okay.
It's time for...
The verdict.
No.
Yes. Oh. Yes. Oh. All right, so...
Why did you...
Both of you...
Unbelievable.
Shut up. So,
can we just... Wait, let's get it right.
Please.
All right. Yeah, go on.
Don't mess it up.
I will.
Okay, do it now.
Thank you.
Are you looking at me? Looking down.
Just do it.
It's time for... One week you'll get it right. You'll get it right eventually. It's time for the verdict.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
Okay, great.
So now you say it.
Now, no, I don't, do I?
What?
What?
Oh, come on.
It's
you
the
know
verdict.
This.
I don't, 3 years. I have absolutely no idea. But I it's do know that verdict. These are my choices.
Okay.
So I get to choose who goes first. That's right. Correct, isn't it?
Yes.
So I think I know which way you are going, Alex. So you go.
Okay. This is very easy for me. So well done on picking it up. It made less money, but in my opinion, it's hands down the better film. No. Easy feat when you show off all unique tricks with film number one in terms of how it looks and the way it's shot and the gags and the rest of it. But film two is just funnier, and absolutely no shade on Elizabeth Wilson, who is great as Abigail Craven / Dr. Pinderschloss in the first movie. Joan Cusack is just simply a better villain, and it does so much more with Wednesday and Pugsley and Camp Chippewa in this movie, and they are fantastic, Wednesday especially. So it's Adam's Family Values.
Okay. Excuse me, sorry. I'm going to go next, if that's all right.
Yeah.
Because in the Addams Family, I think the one-liners are better, although there's stiff competition. And the story is new. The imposter thing is new. In the sequel, the baddie is better, as you said, and the structure is better, even though Act 3 is still a little bit quick. The dance is better in the sequel, obviously, but the original film ends properly with the pregnancy. All right, so here we go. The Thanksgiving pageant scene in Addams Family Values is incredible, but I think it makes you think the whole film is a better film than it actually is, because the camp itself doesn't have a story engine much. So that makes me think that Addams Family 1 is a fuller experience, because although it's patchy on story, it's just a more rounded experience. I don't feel that sense of lag or frustration, even though there is a sense of it a bit, because we're waiting for the family to figure out that Festa is who he says he isn't. So therefore, Adam's Family, the original, is the better film.
Ooh, there you go. What a piece. So, Chris Tilley, So over to you. Which way are you going to go? Which film is going to win? Values or the first film?
I don't think either of these are actually films. But Adam's Family Values...
this is going to be a first.
Adam's Family Values...
Neither!
...is closer to being an actual film. And as we're a film podcast, I'm going for Adam's Family Values.
Yes! Oh, dear. Okay. That makes up for the quiz on Monday.
Oh, good. I'm glad.
Is that
it? Yeah, it's funnier.
Okay, good.
It's funnier.
Fuck it. Someone's not really pulling their weight this week, it feels like.
It's funnier.
And is that it now?
Yeah.
All right, okay. Well done, Adam's Family Values. All the same people were involved in both. So congratulations, everyone involved. So yes, Adam's Family Values is our winner this week. Don't forget, though, you can have your say and tell us how right or wrong you think we got it when the listener poll goes up on Twitter at ClashPod. Interesting polls recently.
Oh, really?
Mm. From Dusk Till Dawn. Slaughtered Near Dark.
Did it?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, the right movie won.
Okay. Yeah.
Anyway, that's all the listener poll online. I know Chris hates me talking about it because, you know, he thinks that I attach too much weight to it, which I do when it goes my way. Right then, next week, the clue I gave on Monday was the cost of love is playing the game. So we are doing two Kevin Costner films with games / sports in. So next week, it's 1988's Bill Durham versus 1996's Tin Cup. And I'm just...
What did you call the first one?
Bill Durham?
It's Bill Durham.
Okay, well, that leads me nicely into this. I've never seen either of these films. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, yeah, but I just really wanted to see them.
I will add, though, if you're not into sport or sports movies, I don't feel like these, particularly Bull Durham, are real full-on sports movies. So I think you'll get something out of them, even if you hate sport.
Okay. So the guy in the first one's called Bull Durham.
The team's called the Bull Durhams.
Right, okay.
And he's not called Bill.
And Tom Cup, is that a name?
Actually, Tin Cup is his nickname.
Right, okay, I think I got it now. Sure, either way, they're both available all sorts of different places. What?
They are, yeah. They're both available to rent on Amazon, and you can rent Tin Cup on Sky, and you can sign up to MGM to get for a week. That's what I've done to watch Bull Durham for free.
Right. Yep. Okay, great. So, yeah.
Good choices, Al.
They're great choices. Thanks very much. I'm thrilled to be hosting next week's Clash. Right then. In the meantime, subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts, Apple, Spotify, or other. Tell your friends about us. Do check out our brand new YouTube channel, Clash of the Titles. And check in with us on Twitter whenever you want to have a chat at ClashPod. We'll be back next week talking Bull Durham and Tin. No, Tom. Wait, Tin Cup. Bye!
Clash of the Titles is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.